Hey, it's Duff Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Thank you for being one of our listeners in 88 countries around the world. Today, we're speaking with Pete, the founder of Scratch First and the architect behind Wonderfruit, Asia's leading arts, music, and cultural sustainability festival. Pete is the third generation of the Siam Motors family, a Green is New Black green warrior, and one of Prestige's 300 high flyers. In this episode, we talk about the evolution of Wonderfruit Music Festival, explorations of the mind, living in a world of gray, the importance of having a practice, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this smooth conversation thanks to our sound partner, Audio Technica. Okay, it's time to live wide awake. Pete, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your journey and sharing all the incredible things that you're doing. So let's start. I was curious, you know, have you always been into sustainability and protecting the planet, or was there some kind of epiphany or series of epiphanies that led you to actually want to do something about it?
I was thinking about this question as well. And I think, like, now that you've got a baby on the way, maybe I guess, you know, we can share some reflections on how, like, humans absorb. When I was very young, my family had moved to Vancouver, and you know, I was 3 at that time. So, like, from 3 to like 7, you know, as kids, I think we didn't really notice it back then. But looking back, I mean, we grew up in, you know, incredible nature and incredible beauty, and I think, like, very different from, like, say, you know, these urban Asian dynamic cities, which are also great. I had, like, a very simple life. We walked to school, we cycled to school. And in British Columbia, as you can imagine, this is, like, quite long ago. I mean, you know, the mountains and the oceans and the parks and everything. So I think by default, as a kid, I absorbed that a lot. I don't think I had recognized it back then, but just, you know, as a young kid, absorbing all that visually and emotionally. And then, when I came back, my dad had started an environmental campaign. This is, like, back in around the 90s, actually, like early 90s, like maybe even late 1980s. And it was called Think Earth, right? So back then, again, it was very pioneering. And again, as a young kid, I was exposed very much to, like, conservation and education. So I guess with those two, you know, kind of foundations, and plus I was always very active as growing up, you know, and I love playing sports, and I still do, that involve going out, outdoor, like more like kind of adventure sports, or, you know, and I feel more at home when I'm, like, you know, like out in the trails or out in the mountains. So I think, like, with all that, it made me really like to be out in nature, which I think is very important as a fundamental. And then with that, then I felt the understanding and the connectedness to kind of, you know, want to protect it and want to engage with it more. So, yeah, I think those things are, like, foundational that made me really feel at home with nature and really, really aspire to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's amazing that you were exposed to a big campaign that your father was doing at such a young age. And so where then did the idea from Wonderfruit really come from, and how has it actually evolved over the years? And how many years has it been now, actually?
2014. So what? 20, yeah, 8 with the 2-year break. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so Wonderfruit actually stemmed from, I guess, all that. And then in around 2013, 2012, when I came back from my studies, and I came back from the UK then. And then this environmental campaign that my dad was that he had was quite dormant. So I had, you know, I'd to the family and said, hey, do you think I could revive this Think Earth campaign? So we started with that intention, with, like, okay, how do we do conservation and, you know, environmental kind of education, but in a more contemporary way. So we were fiddling around with that for, like, a year or two, and mostly it was on the content side. So we were, like, looking at, you know, we actually produced, like, a movie, and, you know, we were engaging in ways how to make conservation or environmental issues more contemporary, more fun, and the mediums that I grew up with as a kid growing up was a lot of this counterculture, subculture. You know, I was a raver, as you call it, an underground rave kid in the 90s. So I kind of took what I was, you know, what I learned from that, or what I experienced from belonging to that type of subculture. And back then it was, you know, as you can imagine, it was really quite underground, but it had this feeling of, you know, purpose and also this kind of excitement and this, yeah, this kind of, you know, like, you know, discovery and exploration, and combined with, you know, my dad's environmental campaign, which was, you know, quite institutional. So we fiddling around with that, and then like around a year in, we're like, ah, okay, you know, this, I think it's a legacy project. It, you know, we don't want to fiddle with it too much, or else we're going to get into trouble. So then we spun that off, and we're like, let's just do something like on our own. So then Scratch First started. We set up the company, and the name Scratch First is really about like, why don't we take the initiative? Like, you know, like you scratch someone's back and the other person scratches the other person's back. So it's kind of like you have an itch, kind of like, you know, go for it. And that quickly accelerated into the concept for Wonderfruit, which was using art and culture and music. In the beginning, it was more probably music, but we quickly realized that our fascination and our love was really about culture, the intersection of culture. So, yeah, that's kind of how we planted the seed for Wonderfruit. And
yeah, I absolutely love the Scratch First. If you have an itch, go for it. That's really clear and powerful. And I didn't actually realize that was where the name came from. So loved learning that. And I mean, Wonderfruit, it was such a magical experience. And I love that it's such a playground. And you're absolutely right with the cultural elements. There's a little bit for everybody. And it's not your typical sort of music festival, though a lot of people, I think, initially come for the music and then they learn about everything else and experience everything else. And I know you've sort of pivoted the focus to have more, you know, emphasis on the art and the culture elements. So maybe you could share a little bit more color for someone that hasn't heard of Wonderfruit. How would you actually explain it to somebody?
I guess we describe Scratch as a multidisciplinary studio that engages culture for impact. And or like I mentioned just now, our fascination is this relationship we have with nature, and this relationship we have, or evolution of this relationship we have with the mind, which I think is also, I guess, things that we share. And what we noticed like is that, okay, we can do impact, and we can really do it, you know, in a very practical, measured way, and we can, you know, get, you know, good results from that, which I think we had demonstrated, you know, with like the basic stuff like recycling, circular economies, and making sure that, you know, all that stuff is in line. But we noticed along the way is that I think like if we really want to encourage people, then it really starts with, you know, ourselves, right? And it starts with how we have this relationship with our mind. And then actually during COVID, or a bit before that, I became really fascinated with that topic, and you know, started meditating a lot, and then started revisiting my Buddhist roots, you know, which I'm a Buddhist, you know. And when I was young, I was exposed to it in more of a ceremonial, traditional, religious way. Although, you know, I've read a lot about, you know, the mysticism and all that of it, but really didn't experience it that deeply. So yeah, during COVID, we had a little bit, you know, obviously we all had time on our side, and, you know, with that reflection and with that being able to intensely spend time observing the mind and see how that reflects to how I reflect out into the environment. Then we added that layer of like relationship with the mind, relationship with nature. And to us, it's mirroring each other. So basically, Wonderfruit is a cultural platform that uses culture, right? Culture, which is in its forms of art, music, architecture, food, social issues, anything, I guess, that we define as how humans create socially. I think that's what culture in our definition is, how they express themselves and create socially, and how that fabric holds society together. And then we use those issues to kind of navigate and create dialogues for people without really, our approach has always been like never trying to push it too much, like, because I guess that's a personal thing that you know, when I grew up, I hated being told what to do. So I was always like learning through playing and discovering and kind of trial and error. And I guess that's how Wonderfruit is kind of designed. It's designed as this platform and this world. You can come for the lights and the sounds, but if you dig deeper into it, there's, you know, a lot of substance within the lights and the sounds and all the content. So nowadays we pay a lot of attention to the methodology of the process and let people unravel that kind of for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much depth you can go to with the experience, which is why I love it so much, and such depths of discovery that people can go on. So I'm also curious, you talked a little bit about the relationship you have with your mind during this extra time that you had to sort of process and reconnect in a more maybe even contemporary way to your Buddhist roots. So what were you able to unlock during that time, and how has your relationship with the mind shifted in the last few years then?
Well, the mind is super erratic, isn't it? It's like, mm-hmm. I think everyone shares that, right? And I think the first thing is the practical side of accepting that it is and not trying to like control it all the time. And then in Buddhism, it's really practical as a philosophy. Right? It's like, you know, you observe it and then through practice. I think it's very important to have a practice. You know, I've concluded is that, you know, we cannot master it or we cannot understand it without a practice. Like, it's like the same with everything. If you want to be good in cooking, in sports, in whatever, and everyone has their own way to do a practice. And the good thing is there's infinite ways to develop a practice, right? with maybe similar foundational roots. So what did I learn about observing my mind? Yeah, it's crazy. My mind's crazy. It's like monkey brain. And I understand now that I am not my thoughts. I used to think that I am my thoughts. And then through that understanding, trying to maintain a good practice to really deepen that. And it's actually fascinating as a topic. Like, I think like with spirituality, it's similar to environmentalism. People are like, oh no, what are you talking about? It's weird. You know, it's like you're going crazy on me. But actually, we want to apply the same thing we did with sustainability or environmental things. You can make it fun, sexy, you can make it super contemporary. And in our case, we want to use art and architecture, music, food, and all that we've done with sustainability, and to add that layer. Because to me, it's the same thing. It's, you know, being mindful is the first step. And then when you're mindful, then you can take your proactive stance on how do you want to engage with your own self and your own creation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think all of this work, they're so deeply interlinked. And this is why, you know, we talk about consciousness. I mean, I use consciousness as a word more than spirituality, but it's the same thing. It really is an inside out job. You know, we need to be able to deal with the mind. We need to be able to process and have this core practice so that we can give more to the world. We can do more. We can understand about the interconnectedness we have with nature. So it's such critical and important work. And yeah, it sounds like a beautiful journey that you've been on to explore all of that. So what does your daily practice look like now that keeps you sort of linked or understanding that you're not your thoughts and the monkey mind not taking over and everything? Do you have a few things that have really helped you?
Yeah. I'm like a creature of habit. I guess like maybe you are too. I'd love to learn what your practice is too. But I wake up and, you know, my first like hour of the day is always the same. It's like I wash my face and I go into a meditation chair. I developed a meditation chair actually.
Oh, wow.
Mind seat. Which, you know, hopefully we hope to like get out in the world as well. But then, yeah, so I sit for, you know, maybe 40 minutes to like an hour. And then I do a bit of movement, sports. I do a bit of, now I'm into like Muay Thai. So I just do a bit of that. And then I start my day. So I hope with that practice, the meditation really is for me, if I had to miss one thing, out of that, I would choose to skip the active part, you know, meaning the physical active, and I would choose the meditation over that. But usually I'm able to do both. And you, what are your tricks?
Mine change. I am a creature of habit and I do the same thing for a while, but then sometimes I get bored and I have to adjust. But I did Vipassana earlier this year, the 10-day, or well, actually it's 11 days. They trick you saying it's 10, but it's a 10-day silent meditation course. And it was so intense. At the same time, it also helped me to shift. And now I'm doing daily meditation again. So, but at just a 15 minutes, it's like a non-duality meditation, which I really like because for me, I get so caught up in my thoughts. So I completely, like, I was just relating to everything you were saying because the monkey mind is so strong and I forget all the time that I'm not my thoughts and I get caught back up in them again. So being able to zoom out and be more in the seat of the witness or in the seat of consciousness, then it's nice for me to be able to have that distance and realize that, you know, there's multiple energies happening at once. And so that really helps me to disconnect or to, yeah.
Did you do the Vipassana here in Thailand? Did you come here to do it?
No, I did it in Australia.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I work out. I like movement as well. Sometimes I journal, sometimes I don't. It depends how I feel. And then I've been trying to do a little bit of visualization again, which I really like, especially because, you know, I'm pregnant now. So I'm like visualizing connecting with my baby and a beautiful, smooth, natural birth and like all these types of things at the moment, which, yeah, are just, channeling good energy and good vibes. So that's because that's, you know, a big life thing that's creeping up on me. So those are the types of things that I do. But I also have a teacher that I work with to do non-duality practice every 2 weeks. And that's amazing right now. And I'm really enjoying that. So because you're right, you know, you need to learn, you need to repeat. And it's difficult sometimes. You get so caught up in life if you're not practicing. So yeah, lots there. And so how did you take this level, this spirituality level, and start integrating that more into Wonderfruit and the experience? And maybe you can also share a little bit about the sustainability and environmentalism aspects of the event as well, like how that's all been integrated.
Okay, so with Wonderfruit 2022, so the foundational root, right, was based on these relationships. And then through that, we embarked on, you know, like how do we encourage, like, or methodology has been based on these encourage, develop, and innovate type of methodology that we've honed throughout the years. So then on that, there's many layers, right? There's like, okay, the encourage part, it's like maybe what we call the basic stuff, which we have to do very well. Eliminating everything from landfills, recycling, upcycling, all that stuff, right? So that layer remained intact, but, you know, obviously we wanted to see how we can do these things better. And then the other layer is like, okay, how do we develop things that engage people in these relationships? And I guess that's more on, you know, say on the creative content side, like how things are built, content, even down to like things such as like, or content was, we develop a lot of our own content now. So we've kind of moved from like, you know, just like booking things to like now more than like, we actually create the content because it's so new, some of these topics. So we work with different verticals like architects, we bring artists, we bring them together and we create like sound experiences and stuff that in our way is like if you can approach these things and engage with them, then somehow perhaps that could encourage this relationship you have with, you know, mind and nature. So we did that through a series of different things, through sound installations, through architectural installations, through farm vertical installations. And then on the innovate side is when we put these different verticals and intersect them, right? And it's when we come up with concepts and experiences that, you know, that take these things that have never really been done and to try to get an audience to kind of experiment with them. So our methodology is kind of based on that. And on the top tier, the encourage part is probably where the bulk of it is. And then, you know, and then because the innovate part just takes a lot of time, and experimentation as well.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining. It's a really beautiful methodology. So over the years, what have been some of the most challenging things, whether with Scratch First or Wonderfruit, and some of the most rewarding experiences that you've had with all the work you've done?
Well, it's always very challenging to create, you know, this, I guess the challenge is, okay, it's like, you know, we love the processes, right? And we work on Wonderfruit throughout the whole year. And throughout that work, actually, there's a lot of things that that occur, you know, that are part of what people see, right? So for us, I think it's how do we translate those things, which we feel is like where the magic happens, and where the wisdom and on and the education part comes from that layer, right? But how do we take that and communicate it and translate it? So I think the key thing for us is more of a communication, and to not, like, you know, get people bored as well through that. And then how do we onboard them through that? Because, like, for a lot of the people we work with, that's actually where they are, the ethos and or methodology really comes to life, right? But for a lot of the attendees coming to Wonderfruit, perhaps, you know, they see the end result of that. So for us as a challenge, we're trying to broaden that horizon a little bit and have more contact points throughout the year. Actually, we're working on something for this year, which, you know, hopefully in a couple of months we'll be able to unravel, and that's not for everyone, because we understand some people just want to come and they enjoy it, you know, and they don't want to go too deep into it, which is absolutely fine. I think that's how life is, you know, it's in that non-forceful way, you know, we can't. So, yeah, I think that's always been the challenge for us. It's like, you know, steering ourselves and people towards, you know, this whole type of learning process.
So you mentioned that you're going to be rolling out a few other things this year, and I understand you've been exploring the world of Web3. So I'd love to understand a little bit about what has sparked your interest here, and yeah, what are you looking to kind of get roll out with these new technologies?
So with Web3, as I mentioned, like, at first it was very simple. Like, I just wanted to understand what all the fuss was about. Before that, we were obviously engaged with crypto. We rolled something out in 2016, I think, with Tree Coins. So quite early back then. Always been quite fascinated with, you know, with crypto and the philosophy behind it. And then with NFTs, you know, we started looking into that, and I didn't really get it at first. And frankly, even now, I'm very, very much a novice. You know, I'm like, and then I'm trying to understand a lot of it too, which a lot of it goes right over my head. So, but anything that really goes right over my head, I feel, you know, sometimes either that means it's a little bit perhaps too advanced for me, or the other thing is like, okay, maybe it needs closer examination. So through NFTs, you know, we started exploring that during COVID, and then we felt, oh, the technology and, you know, the premise behind it of being able to connect directly with, you know, your community is really interesting, right? I guess that's something everyone's interested to do, to connect directly. And then to also be able to have, obviously, that, you know, that technological layer that allows you to do things along the way through that. So we were really interested in that element. And then, so then we created like this whole narrative around it, which is, you know, based on our ethos, this relationship with mind and nature. It's a project we created called Birth of Beings. We didn't really launch it yet, just because the timing of it in 2022 with the crypto markets, you know, as you know, what happened. And we felt that maybe the educational part of it, we needed to pay more attention to how to explain these things, because I'm not interested at all in the speculation part of it. And I'm not interested at all about doing NFTs, you know, to make money very quickly. You know, obviously we want to make money through it, but our philosophy on that has always been to make it similar how we do it in a traditional way, right? You work hard, you do something with value and people like it, and then it's an exchange. So I've never really been interested in that element. I've always been very skeptical in it. Of how, you know, NFT projects were making, you know, crazy amounts of money in a very short time. So the skepticism, I guess, proved itself. But on the other hand, how we relate to the community and how we engage and empower and reward the community through, you know, this technological layer is something very interesting. So through that, we have a project and we're still thinking how to integrate it. And yeah, I think when things become more clear there, but basically meaning like what we imagine in the future is like when people come to Wonderfruit, they can engage with, you know, this narrative, this creative narrative through the art, through music, through experiences, and then get kind of rewarded. We have to really understand what rewarded means, first, and then come up with our interpretation of that. But yeah, that's, this is kind of where we are at with that right now.
Yeah, no, I think it's an exciting and intriguing additional layer that can be part of the experience. And I think it's exciting to see how this technology will integrate more experiences, as you've mentioned, connect community, create rewards, but also help to solve for some of the issues that we're facing in the world and to remove borders and boundaries. And yeah, I'm very excited to see what happens when conscious creators and entrepreneurs start to maximize this technology and integrate it into experiences where we'll end up afterwards. So yeah, very cool to hear that that's something that you guys are exploring.
I think that what you said about the conscious creators, I think that's the key thing, right? Like, I think, like, how do you do it with the right intention and the right purpose?
Exactly.
Which, we saw a bunch of stuff done with that, I guess, in very funny ways. And then that, I think, is obviously a bit of a setback, but it's also an opportunity, because for a lot of people, I think now they're like, they don't want to go near any of this because they do feel mm-hmm. it's fraudulent and, it's very skeptical. So onboarding and educating, and like you mentioned, doing it, intentionally and I guess is what we have to overcome.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think for me, I've been questioned a lot as like someone that is kind of an environmentalist or cares about the planet, like why I'm talking about Web3 and blockchain, because there's such a stigma around it. But I really, that's only when really it's, proof of work. But if there's so many greener chains and everything, and I do see the potential of what this technology can actually do to connect. And as I said, to, remove some of these boundaries and it just needs to be done in the right way. And I think there's a perfect opportunity right now to educate and onboard people to think about things in a different way for solving. Like, this is something that can help create solutions, not create more problems. And I think, yeah, if we can onboard and educate through that lens, then people will be able to understand, but also create in this space in a different way and to show up in a different way. So yeah, that's why I'm a big advocate for the potential. But yeah, so, Scratch First and Wonderfruit, these are just like a few of the things that you do, but you also help with your family motor vehicle company, for example, among others. But I was kind of curious, as you're literally building Asia's largest sustainability music, arts, culture event. And then on the same time, you are also selling cars, which are having like an increased strain on the planet. So like, do you ever sort of struggle with that conflict at all?
So the family business is, I've been fortunate as a third generation. And yeah, we are kind of like an industrial conglomerate. And if you think of it, actually, the progress through the world would not be possible without any of these things. I tend to think of it as really not black and white. I think also philosophically, when we talk about consciousness and all that, that's, I guess, the message behind a lot of it, right, is that nothing really is very black and white. And if we look at it, I guess, in that way, then I guess collaboration and progress, I think, will be very difficult. I think everyone understands the environmental challenge we have ahead of us. And I think everyone, is trying to work towards that. But no, I don't feel any guilt or anything in that, Stephanie. I actually think, with if we're born into opportunity or if we're born into resources, we have to make use of it. And I do see a lot of amazing things being done by a lot of amazing people, that say perhaps work coincides with things that I guess are, more deemed as being polluting I think it's about how we progress it rather than how we victimize it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's all a transition and I totally appreciate and agree with every, there's a gray period and we are progressing and taking steps forward to make the world a better place. And I know that, yeah, the company is doing that as well. And obviously you're, you know, helping to educate thousands of people every year and onboard them through creative experiences and infiltrate their minds with sustainability and consciousness. So it's so vital work.
Yeah, we will need these guys, right? We will need these big companies on board if we want to really make big change. It's 100% clear. And it's really good, I think, to kind of have this social creative spotlight, because it also, with the resources of these big conglomerates and you know, it's, yeah, I've seen a lot of creativity and a lot of good innovation come out of that too. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing. I appreciate you answering the question.
Yeah, we can't shy away from these things. Yeah.
No, I think that's what I love about it. You know, we do all have to work together. Everyone's playing a part. And the more that we can integrate and infiltrate these big companies and help to steer in a different direction and to help to work together to make a better future, then it's better for everyone. So I totally agree. We've got to do this all together. So if you could go back and give your younger self a piece of advice, what would it be?
Probably, you know, I've got kids now, right? And so looking at that question with having kids, it's interesting. Because like with kids, like obviously I want to try to get them to meditate and, you know, to have adopt these practices. But, you know, when I was that age, it was like, yeah, that's the last thing you want to do is meditate. But then, but looking back, you know, ideally, I would probably like to adopt more practices in my life at a younger age. I do think that by doing that, probably I could have accelerated things, I guess. But so yeah, I think that's the and also relationships with ourselves and people around us and everything, right, could be much more intact and more meaningful. But I do think with life, it's like, sometimes you have to learn through many things and mostly people do learn through turbulence and mistakes, you know, and then reflecting back. I guess that's how we build these, you know, these confirmations and these, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And how do you think we can live wide awake?
So I think the answer to that is, as people or in our generation, that maybe we're not talking about kids anymore, but I think having a practice, you know, unless there's some other way, someone please tell me, but I haven't come across it at all. And actually having a practice is actually, I think, carving out time for yourself, and it's actually really meaningful and very fun to do. So I think to live wide awake is to have practice, and it could be, you know, whatever type of practice.
Yeah, whatever works for you. Well, Pete, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing so deeply. And it's beautiful, all the things you're doing. You know, we're huge fans of yours and the Wonderfruit platform. So hopefully we'll make it back to the fields this year. But thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And to you too, Stephanie, and to all the great work you're doing, maybe off this chain record, then, you know, maybe we can find some time to talk and, you know, see what we can do to collaborate together. I love the dialogue that you said just now about educating people on, say, Web3 or emerging Web3, and how we link that to, you know, relationship with minds and nature. Seems like it's very similar, the fascination we have with that. So perhaps that's something we could, you know, work on towards the end of the year, a collaboration.
Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Pete. Firstly, when we explore the relationship and evolution of the mind, we can unlock so much and realize the interconnectedness of life and nature. Secondly, it's important to have a practice in whatever shape that takes for you. And thirdly, nothing is black and white. We're living in a world of gray. We need to work together and collaborate to achieve the change that we need to see. Curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steffel Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.